comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here. It's talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it's a place where you actually matter. So thank you for being here. I didn't mention it yesterday, and I try to remember to mention it in each and every show because we always have new folks that are tuning in, people that haven't listened to the show before. It's a new experience for them, and they don't know. And that is our K-Files e-zine. The K-Files, pardon me, the K-Files is our free weekly newsletter, and we send it out via email, and we send it out each and every week, all right? It's absolutely free. There are no strings attached. So there's really no reason to not subscribe. And the K-Files always contains information that is, you won't get it anywhere else. It contains some that you will get elsewhere, but it contains some you won't get elsewhere. So go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and subscribe. And a reminder, it's not the K-Zine. So you won't find a link that says K-Zine. Never has been K-Zine. It always has been, and I suspect always will be, K-Files. Another reminder, you know, we have something that is pretty cool, and that is our weekend edition. The weekend edition is it's kind of on a trial basis. You know, we said we'll give it a try. We'll see if people like it. Great. And if they don't, you know what we do here at the Kevin Smith Show. If something is working, we do it. If it isn't working, we change and we do something else. And so far, the weekend edition is a hit. But don't forget, on Saturday and Sunday, we have the Kevin Smith Show weekend edition with Jerry Wills, and he does a great job hosting that. Our members area, well, the members area is where you can see the show. It's also where the archives are. It's where chat is located. It's where the forums are located. And some other things. Video Galaxy is there. A library of free ebooks that you can download, and they're yours for free. So it's a great deal. It's 23 cents a day. Now that's $6.95 a month. And I encourage you to become a member, because in addition to those things, you do, if you're a member, you do get to watch the show live, or you get to watch the latest show. And why is that important? Well, because in shows like we're going to do tonight, I use video and I use pictures to illustrate what we're talking about. And if you're a member, you get to see those. All right, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As you noticed, if you looked at the website, tonight's show is about something that's, we've talked about it in general terms on many occasions, and that is the fact that it seems that there is quite an increase in the frequency of earthquakes. Now, this is not new. This has been going on, this seeming increase in the frequency of earthquakes. This has been going on for a number of years, and we've talked about it for a number of years. The other night, I don't know, a week or so ago, I had as my guest here on the show Walter Bosley, and we talked about the mystery of these missing sea lions. Now, we made a mistake during the show. We called them seals. They're, you know, a sea lion and a seal are not the same. They look a little similar, but they're not the same. They are sea lions. And there's a big herd of these sea lions that inhabit the area around Pier 39. And that's off the coast of California there. And they suddenly disappeared. And Walter told us the last time these sea lions disappeared like that, very shortly after they disappeared, there was a big earthquake in San Francisco, and you remember seeing the videos of the freeway bridges that were just pancaked down, and it was very devastating. Well, about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, they disappeared again. And Walter was on the show talking with us about that, and we were talking about what does it mean. Now, Walter told me about information that was given to him by someone both of us know, and who will remain nameless at this point. We won't use the name yet. But the information that was given to Walter seemed to indicate there was going to be another earthquake. And in the sea lions were sort of a precursor, but there's additional information. And since that time, there has been much more additional information and developments. So I've asked Walter to join me on the show tonight to talk about this sort of very mysterious prediction of an earthquake. And it did come true. And Walter is going to fill us in on the details. Walter, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back. Always like to be here.
Walter, tell us the details about this prediction.
Oh, okay. Well, first I want to make a slight correction. The sea lions actually disappeared the day after Thanksgiving. They have been gone quite a while, and later we'll get to where it appears they have turned up.
Okay.
But back to the prediction, it's very interesting. This individual that we know had kind of a what he thought was a mundane experience regarding a clock. He had drifted off to sleep and woke up and glanced at the clock and thought that the clock said 4:30. Now, he was awakened by a phone call, my phone call, and he thought the clock was 4:30, got distracted by the phone, looked back and saw that it was only 1:30. Now, he thought that, nothing unusual about that, because a 4 can look like a 1 in certain light, particularly if you have a digital clock. But it turns out that he doesn't have a digital clock. He's got the analog clock with the two hands. Then it was clearly just before 4:30. He said it was actually at a few minutes before 4:30. Well, it's actually, closer to 1:30, he finds out. Well, he tells me this information, and, we're thinking, as strange things go, does this mean anything? So we thought we'd take a look at you know, anything, earthquakes happening anywhere near 4:30, and we assumed, you know, maybe the very next day.
Okay, but yeah. why did you decide to look at earthquakes?
Because we had been talking about the seals. I had just found out that the seals had been gone since the day after Thanksgiving.
Sea lions.
And I called to discuss that with him in light of the fact that we know that the last time they disappeared was the 1989 earthquake. So we thought, well, synchronicity being what it is, maybe we're dealing with an earthquake situation here.
Okay. And so you and he then started looking for information about earthquakes at around 4:30.
We were looking to see if one would hit, yes.
And what happened?
Well, nothing happened the next day, but about 10 days later, just over this weekend, a 6.5 earthquake hit offshore near Eureka, California, on the 9th of January on Saturday, and it hit at 4:27 p.m., just a few minutes before 4:30. And Eureka, as a matter of fact, has a ley line going right smack dab through it, leading up from the San Francisco Bay Area.
It also is sitting almost on top of the northern end of the San Andreas Fault.
Yes, I believe they call it the Rust Fault up there.
Mm-hmm. And that fault actually runs, it kind of starts a little bit offshore and then runs down the coast of California and then moves inland towards Bakersfield.
Now, you know we've talked about, I've talked about the curvy linear lines, but there's also the straight grid lines, right?
Yeah.
There's the different lines. What's interesting is Eureka, California has one of the curvy linear lines running right through it and down south right into San Francisco Bay Area, but also about where the earthquake had its epicenter, offshore, mm-hmm. a major grid line that comes up through east of San Francisco, east of Oakland, and runs out northwest into the sea, runs right through about where the epicenter of this Eureka quake at 4:27 hit just on Saturday. It's very interesting that this ley line system also connects to the city where the individual we're talking about lives and had this strange premonition. So, you know, it was about 9 or 10 days off, but you know that.
Well, I don't know that we can say it was 9 or 10 days off because of the fact that he didn't give a date for it. He just had the time.
Exactly. So just because he saw it 9 or 10 days ahead of time, you know, we were making an assumption that it would be in the next 24 hours, but turned out it was just a little over a week later. And pretty substantial. I might say a 6.5 had hit, you know, on shore. You know, that would have been a real shaker.
Well, yeah, and listen, as it turns out, it was pretty much of a shaker anyway. And for those who are watching on KSS TV, I'm going to show you what it looked like, because what you're going to see is surveillance video inside of a store. And you can see the shaking and people rushing for the door and getting out. There's no panic here. You can tell these are Californians. They're used to the ground shaking, but they are leaving the store. And while the light fixtures are still swaying, you'll see people start to come back into the store. So apparently the ground has stopped its motion. But the light fixtures and other fixtures in the store are swaying, and we see people begin to come back into the store. Is that typical, Walter? 6.5 Californians, yeah, we'll get out of the store, but it's no big deal.
Yeah, we really are are used to them. You know, personally, in fact, we just had one hit two nights ago, sitting right here in my living room. I had one hit about 5 miles east of me, which really is why we're talking about this tonight, because so much of this is happening right now. But it was enough to shake the house, and personally, I kind of get a kick out of them. I know that might sound weird to some people, but, you know, a 6.5, you're going to feel it, and things are going to shake. But Californians, we know what to do. We know where to go, how to deal with it. We're used to it. You know, generally, it doesn't make us panic.
If you had one as large as the one that hit Indonesia a couple of years ago, it would be, I think that one was, what, 9 on the Richter scale? There's really no place to go.
Right. Well, when I say where to go, we mean, you know, which kind of structures to get away from, getting away from, you know, maybe where electrical wires, you know, might, as far away as you can from them. You know, little things like that that, you know, you've been taught that, you know, you just kind of automatically turn on. Like when you're in the house, you generally get to a door frame. That's what they teach you, because that's the stronger part of the structure.
Well, we're talking about Californians being used to earthquakes. And you and I talked today, you've done a little bit of research about how many earthquakes have happened, we'll say within the last 7 days. And I took a look at the site that you recommended and found how many had happened in North America in the last 7 days, as well as around the world within the last 7 days. The place where you find that out, ladies and gentlemen, is at the USGS website. And as it turns out, according to their information, within the past 7 days, we've had 205 earthquakes. you know, that's a lot of earthquakes. And it's pretty interesting where these earthquakes are centered. They're centered around a fault line system that runs around the Pacific and into the Caribbean. And that's generally called the Ring of Fire. Walter, I also found that we had, in North America, 161 earthquakes in the past 7 days. Now, that's a lot of earthquakes, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's more than usual, I believe, from the research I've been able to find. And I'll tell you what's interesting is, several of those were in the western edge of Montana near the northeastern border of Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And I am looking at my national ley line map, and they follow a line that flows right along just in the terrain I described. They absolutely were on these ley lines.
Some of these earthquakes we don't hear anything about. And in fact, most of them, we don't hear anything about them. And I would suspect that's because they are minor in their intensity and therefore don't get a lot of press, don't get a lot of mention. But there's just a whole cluster. For those who are looking at our TV channel, you can see a cluster of these things along the Alaskan Aleutian Islands. And they've had just a bunch of them up through there, and then up through the curve in Alaska as it heads, as the curvature heads back down south towards Canada. Then along the California coast, all the way down into Mexico, and now crossing over into the Caribbean, there was an earthquake today in Haiti. And the first reports had it at 7.0 on the Richter scale, and then later reports put it at 7.3. The earthquake was strong enough that it collapsed the hospital in Port-au-Prince, the capital city. And in addition to that, it caused a tsunami alert to be issued. And I do not have an update since then. That's a fairly major earthquake. The map that I'm looking at shows me fault lines, but it doesn't show me ley lines. Do you have any idea, Walter, about the ley lines in Port-au-Prince?
Well, on my map that I have, we have a a major line that runs from the northwest out of Canada through the eastern, southeastern United States and right down the middle of Florida, the length of Florida, from north to south at a northwestern to southeastern angle. And that straight line cuts through, now it's off my map, but I've kind of looked at larger maps. That cuts through Cuba, and Haiti, Dominican, is off to the east of Cuba. So actually, what's interesting is, according to the maps I have, I don't have a line identified as running through Haiti. That does not mean that there aren't some curvy linear lines, that we just haven't got to that part of the world map yet. But the major grid lines, one passes through Cuba just to the west, and one passes out of the Carolinas to the east, a bit east of Haiti as far as the straight grid lines are concerned, but none of the curvy linears. So I don't have any lines identified going through Haiti, no.
But we do have a fault line that runs right through Haiti,
which indicates a curvy linear that we just haven't identified yet.
We have just a few seconds here before we have to go to break. When we come back, I understand that you've had another conversation with this individual.
Yes.
And we are going to share with you a little bit of information, folks, but we cannot share all of the information yet. But we're going to do that when we come back from this break. And it has to do with another possible upcoming event of some kind. And we'll explain all of that, and we'll explain why we're not going to give all the details just yet. And it's because we cannot just yet. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about this, when you say flurry of earthquakes, or swarm of earthquakes, that those are technical terms that geologists use, seismologists use. So it's not accurate to say a flurry of earthquakes here or a swarm of earthquakes, but certainly a spate of earthquakes. 161 earthquakes in North America in the last 7 days. The latest one we know about is the one in Haiti that happened this afternoon. And apparently there was a great deal of devastation in Port-au-Prince, the capital city, and the hospital collapsed, so that's not a good thing. Walter, this same individual that told you that there was some significance about 4:30, and you and he thought it had to do with earthquakes, and lo and behold, the one in, he said it was just a couple of minutes or so before 4:30 when he looked at the clock. The one in Eureka actually happened at 4:27 p.m.
Yes.
And so he has been in touch with you, and he has told you about something else. Now, folks, I want to explain what we can and cannot tell you about here. I want to explain why. The details of this, if I were to give you the details now, it could cause a panic, and if this is in, well, you don't want to cause a panic anywhere, anyway. If this is, if it turns out to not be accurate, then everyone would be saying that me and Walter hoaxed this thing. And that's, we're not going to do that, and we're not going to give you the details. But as I understand, Walter, this individual has been working with some kind of system and has said that something else significant is up. Tell us a little bit about the system he works with, and then I'll sort of guide us on what we can say about what's up.
Okay. The individual works with a sort of... It has to do somewhat with numbers, but it also has to do with some, you know, intuitive experiences. Again, in this is key in places associated with you know, some of these lines that we're talking about. Again,
Walter, you're sounding real muffled.
I am. How's
this? That's better.
That's better. The individual uses a system that involves numbers and some intuitive experiences. And what I mean by that is the clock example is a very good example. Something that will be odd, like waking up and thinking that it's, you know, almost 4:30 in the afternoon, and then turning right around and looking and realizing, no, it's actually 3 hours earlier. But, you know, okay, so what is the significance? Why not 5:30? Why not 6:30 or 7:30? Why not an hour before? It was specifically, you know, just a few minutes before 4:30. So therefore, saying that a few minutes before 4:30 is what's significant, you have something to go on, and then from there, you would do a, you know, a little what some people would call numerology, I guess, but I guess a little more exact than that. You know, you would come to conclusions. Now, without giving too much away, we are going to be able to prove that we're not hoaxing this either way, but we can't discuss that right now. But subsequent to a certain date, we're going to be able to, you know, you and I are going to be able to prove to the listeners that we're not hoaxing what we're saying. But the point is that this system works with some numbers, and it also happens to work with, in this particular case, the date of another similar event in the same location in the past. Okay? And the numbers of the numerology of his particular system works with the intuitive experience that had to do with a clock, not specifically the 4:30 thing alone, but another experience with a clock in another place, and these dates and the place. It all works in conjunction and into one big synchronicity. It's not a coincidence. And that is how this person then intuitively is convinced that there's going to be a major event in a particular place on a particular date.
All right. Now, folks, let me explain something. Here on this show, we, as you know, we talk about anything that is strange and unexplained. We talk about things that people generally... call paranormal. We talk about things that I don't think are paranormal, but they're still strange, like UFOs and extraterrestrials. I don't view that as paranormal, but I do, you know, it's you don't see a UFO every day, so it's a little unusual. When we talk about things that are paranormal, the big criticism that is leveled by the status quo scientists is that it's these things are always ambiguous. These predictions are ambiguous. They, of course, Walter, that's the big thing that people say, you know, about Nostradamus, that it's ambiguous, and you can take something that he said and say, aha, you see, that was a prophecy about this. But you could take that same prophecy, that same quatrain, and stretch it over several different events and say, that was a prophecy about this, or that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's from the status quo scientists. But folks, let me tell you something. In our genre, in our community of people who are interested in the strange and unexplained, we have two extremes. We have the one extreme that will buy anything. They believe absolutely anything, and that's not wise. That's not being open-minded. That's being empty-headed. There are other people who are in the paranormal UFO kind of genre, and they're on the other extreme, and what they do is eat their own. They are often more critical than the professional debunkers. And then out in the middle is where most of us are. So because of that, I think it's very wise for us to check. I think it's wise for us to test. I think it's wise for us to analyze when someone makes a prediction. Now, because this individual accurately predicted to Walter and to me, that or through Walter, that there was going to be an earthquake, and it was going to be at 4:30 p.m., and it was going to be soon. He thought it would be within the next 24 hours or so, but he wasn't sure. He assumed that. Well, and then it happened. Okay, it happened. Not in the next 24 hours, but it happened within the next 10 days or so. Because of that, and because of some other things I'm aware of with this individual, I decided when this latest, I guess we can call it a prediction, when he told Walter about this and Walter shared it with me, I decided that what we needed to do is, first of all, it's of such a serious matter that we don't need to give the details because we don't know that it's true. Now, I don't think this individual is hoaxing, and I don't think he's lying to us. That's not it. We just don't know that this is an accurate prediction. But we've devised a way, Walter and I have, to be able to certify to you and certify for you whether it's accurate or not. Now, we've devised a way to do that, and it involves, Walter, a specific date. Now, does he say this is going to happen on that date, or does he say it's going to happen either on or right around that date? How does he say it?
He is most convinced that it's on that particular date, but we've discussed it, and you know, my position is the type of prediction this is. If it's, I'm going to give him 24 hours on either side of that, and I'll call it an exact hit. I mean, if this happens, you know, the day before or the day after, as far as I'm concerned, he was right. Now, you know, actually, as big as this is, you know, if it happens even within a week or two, you know, that's pretty darn close. But I'm going to give him, I'm going to say 24 hours on either side of the target date.
Should
it's
we
good enough for me to call it an exact hit. But
okay.
He's convinced it's that day.
Should we share the date?
I would not.
Okay.
Not at this point. I will talk with the person at greater length more on that issue, and maybe as we get closer, he he would be willing to, you know, because as you said, Kevin, and my position too is, and this individual's position is also, he doesn't want to get in the business of, you know, being one of these guys who comes out here and makes these predictions that we all hear, and that, you know, they never come true.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because this is a pretty serious matter, and he's totally cooperative and supportive of the verification system that you and I agreed upon, because you and I are of like mind. We need to be able to verify and confirm, because too many times it's not done, if ever.
Yeah, and now, folks, I know some of you are going to say, well, if you're not going to tell us what this is or what the date is, then what's the purpose? Why are you even doing this? Why are you even talking about it on the show? Because it would have no meaning whatsoever if I come to you the day after this target date. If I come to you and provide you proof that it happened, you would have no point of reference. It would make no difference to you. And you would have no idea what I was talking about. But this is also something I think we need to say, Walter, is this individual's not in the business of making these predictions either.
That's true.
It's something that has happened with him, and that he has done his system with numbers that he uses. It just happened, and he's convinced that this is what is the case. He's convinced that this is the deal, and that on this target date there is going to be not a rather significant event, but a really significant event. Now,
I'd like to just throw in there too that another reason we're doing the verification the way we're doing it is you are going to hear. Starting, you know.
Hey, Walter, I hate to do it. A break just took over. But when we come back from break, pick up right there, okay? All right, folks, we'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and along with me tonight, Walter Bosley. We're talking about this spate of earthquakes that has hit really all around the Pacific Rim. And just in North America alone, there have been 161 earthquakes within the past 7 days, according to the USGS. The latest one being today in Haiti, which is in the Caribbean, and it was a 7.3 magnitude with rather extensive damage in the capital city, Port-au-Prince. And Walter, you were saying something about the verification method when we went to break, and I had to cut you off.
Yes, and then I want to follow that with a comment on what you were just saying about the Pacific Rim. I have some very interesting information. I want to say that our verification, another reason we're doing it the way we're doing it, and, you know, multiple reasons, is that you will start hearing after tonight's show. You'll hear on other shows and other sources. They'll be talking. They'll be out there making their predictions. They'll be naming dates. They'll be naming times. And if the past pattern, you know, proves out like it usually does, they'll be wrong. And if we named the date and the place and everything, you know, if they got the right place or whatever, we would get lost in the mix. And that's not what we want to do. We want to be able to say, you know, when it's time to prove it, to show our hand, that no, this was it, this was the day.
Well, and to be more specific, Walter, as you and I both know, there are a couple of shows that tune in and find out what we're doing on this show, and then they do it. And that's okay. I don't mind. But this is information that is so important And it's so important for us to be able to nail down whether this guy is accurate or not, that we really can't let our cat out of the bag. Because if we do, if we give the date, if we give you details about what this is about, you will hear it on another show tomorrow.
Yes.
And
they'll be taking credit for it.
Well, yeah, and I don't mind who takes credit, but that blows the whole verification thing. So,
well, and that's the spirit of why I say that, is we're trying to verify a particular individual's, prediction.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of proprietary to that person, in a way. So part of our, but back to what you said about the Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Basically, and a lot of earthquakes regularly happen around the Pacific Rim. That goes on all the time. We're just in a heightened state of intensity right now. And what's interesting is, what you've got is, you've got the North American plate and the plate of Asia, and they're pressing in towards each other. And they're pressing on the Pacific plate underneath there, and that wreaks a lot of havoc. Now, what's interesting is, just in the last 7 days of those earthquakes that have happened in the last 7 days, there were three pretty good shakers in the Solomon Islands. On the 3rd of January, there was a 6.6. On the same day after that, there was a 7.2. That's another thing we need to talk about, is how usually you have these earthquakes and the aftershocks and the subsequent earthquakes in the area, they lessen. Well, these are often intensifying. So you had on the 3rd of January in the Solomon Islands a 6.6. On the same day, later that day, you had a 7.2. And then 2 days later on the 5th of January, you had a 6.8. And these were all three in the Solomon Islands over the course of about 2.5-3 days. Now, here's what's interesting. The Solomon Islands, according to Sechery and his research, is where a major nodal point is located. In fact, it was the original nodal point of Pangaea. Now, Pangaea, those of you who are familiar with it, is the original landmass of the Earth when all the continents were together. So when the Solomon Islands is showing such intense earthquake activity, at least Sechery, who's, you know, one of our experts on these ley lines, he says there's significance there.
Well, if it is the original ley line nodal point of Pangaea, that means it's the original nodal point of planet Earth. Because Pangaea, and look, sometimes people say, well, you know, there was no Pangaea, there was no time when the continents were all together. Yes, there was. That is beyond scientific doubt. Even NASA has that figured out. I mean, and that doesn't sound like I meant for it to sound. NASA is more concerned about space. But in getting ready for manned space missions, they tried to find everything they could about this Earth so they would have something to compare it with if they went to other planets. And they discovered, by searching out what and mapping out the bottom of the oceans, they discovered these scratch marks, big grooves in the bottoms of the oceans. And they discovered that that's caused by the continents moving away from each other. And if you push a continent back in the direction of the scratch marks, they all fit back together in one huge continent. And that's what we refer to as Pangaea. So if that's the original nodal point for the ley lines in Pangaea, then it is the original nodal point for the ley lines on Earth.
That would be logical. It was not put that way to me, but that is very logical.
Now, the question is, why did the continents begin to break apart? And what role, if any, did the ley lines play in the breaking apart of the continents? Do you have a comment or a theory about that?
I believe that Sechery answers that in the Handprint of Atlas. his book that came out a couple of years ago that is being revised as we speak and will be re-released, a new revision, in February. And that was caused, what you're talking about was caused by an artificial device hitting the Earth many, many, many ages ago in what is now the Great Rift Valley of Africa. And we've talked about this before. Sesh has been talking about this for a few years. We published it in his book 2 years ago. This object struck what is now the Great Rift Valley and shifted the axis of the Earth. It's a fascinating theory. You've got to read his book. It really explains it better than I could. But that set these whole continents, all this in motion.
Is this an object that struck the Earth at a 45-degree angle?
Wow. The angle it struck, off the top of my head, I can't recall the angle it struck, but I know it has to do with striking at 19.47. The number 19.47 factors into it, and researchers like Richard Hoagland and others have noticed the significance of 19.5, 19.47. And, it's been written about elsewhere, but...
Yeah, that plays a part in the hyperdimensional physics. Now, the reason I ask at a 45-degree angle is because I have heard that from others and on this show. And then I saw a documentary on television where they were talking about where our moon came from, and that's one of the theories that they had, is that an object possibly the size of Mars struck the Earth at a 45-degree angle and tilted the axis and blew debris out into space that became the moon.
Yes, that's the theory.
That's one of the theories. I don't think that's where the moon came from, but
right,
the object striking at 45 degrees is certainly something that... And that was a theory that was put forward by an astronomer. And we have to say it's got some credibility, but it is a theory.
Cherie's theory is that an intelligent race struck the Earth with an artificial object, creating and artificially creating an artificial axis of the Earth.
All right. We have not an artificial break, but a real one, and it's taking over right now. We'll be back with more information right after this.
Arizona, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in our second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here, and we're talking about this spate of earthquakes that has hit within the last 7 days. Just in North America alone, there have been 161 earthquakes within the last 7 days. The latest one being today, this afternoon, in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. A 7.3 magnitude earthquake collapsing the hospital and causing a great deal of damage and chaos in the streets, is what the report said. And also, it triggered a tsunami alert. I did not have at showtime, and I therefore do not have now, an update about the tsunami alert, whether one actually developed or not. We're talking with Walter Bosley because Walter has some inside information on some of this. And Walter, you were saying that the author, who, by the way, has been a guest here on the show, Sesh Hari, who is one of the experts and probably one of the leading experts on ley lines, in his book called The Handprint of Atlas, says that an extraterrestrial race caused an artificial impact of the Earth to, or caused an impact of the Earth to create artificially the 23 degree tilt of our axis, right?
Yes, yes. It was a planned event. It was not an accidental celestial body collision. It was, according to his theory, according to the Handprint of Atlas, which you've got to read the revised edition when it comes out. You've got to read this book if you haven't. It was a planned event by an intelligence civilization to create the artificial axis of the Earth. Our current axis is artificially set.
All right. Tomorrow, folks, you may not be aware of this, but if you're not, you will be now. At 7:47 in the morning, now that's East Coast time, so you have to convert it for your time zone. Okay? At 7:47 Eastern Standard Time, there is an object that is going to streak past the Earth. It is between 33 to 50 feet wide. It will be passing us closer than anything in recorded history. It will be passing us at a distance of about 80,000 miles. Now, they don't know what it is. That's the interesting thing. They have no idea what it is. They just know that it's coming in. And they say there's no chance that it's going to hit the Earth. It could be an asteroid, they say. But they say that would be too small to cause damage. What nonsense. I mean, that's what this article says. An asteroid 50 feet in diameter is large enough to cause a lot of damage. It's not a planet buster, but it can cause a lot of damage if it makes it down to the surface of the Earth. But this is not predicted to be one that's going to strike the Earth. It's just going to be passing by. Now, they say that it will be bright enough that if you have a good amateur telescope, you can see it. Walter, the only reason I bring that up is because you mentioned what Sesheri says about an extraterrestrial race of beings striking the Earth with something on purpose to create this tilt that we have.
Yes.
Why would this tilt be important?
The axis of the Earth, the way the Earth sets, the way the Earth orbits around the Sun, and the way the Moon, also working as a smaller gear, goes around the Earth, could be part of what I call the, and I'm not saying the idea is originally me, I just call it the machinery of the universe, the clockwork of the universe, and it might be that this is why we have a life-sustaining atmosphere on this, on the surface of this planet, is because of the specific axis and rotation and spin. It might be what's required to have the life-sustaining atmosphere, so therefore this intelligent race, you know, it looks like theoretically they came here, they impacted the Earth to create this machine we call this Earth, and it just might be the math and the science of how it works, of how life works on the surface.
Interesting things, Walter, are showing up in the news. You know, you talk about synchronicities. Interesting things are showing up in the news. New discoveries, and who knows, some of these discoveries, it may just be that we have just recently discovered them. It may be that what's being discovered is something new, and that's why we recently discovered it. We don't know. But I thought today, you know, it looks like everything is moving toward, hey, guess what, folks? ETs are real. You've got the Vatican moving that direction. You have certain governments moving that direction. You have the meeting that is supposed to have taken place at the UN building where allegedly a high-ranking U.S. Navy officer briefed people from about 30 countries on ET reality and said we've got to get the population acclimatized to the idea that ETs are real, because there's coming an unambiguous presentation of the ETs. They're going to show up, and it's going to be unambiguous. Now, you put all of that together, and then watch the news and the kinds of things that are coming out. And it just seems like things are moving that direction. Now, in science fiction, we're going to get back to these earthquakes in a minute. And there's actually a connection here. All right. In the news, things are coming out that we used to see in science fiction movies. Walter, do you remember seeing any of the old science fiction movies where you had this half plant, half human, or half plant, half animal thing, and it was some kind of a monster, you know? And I can remember several of them where they had those. I remember one where a scientist became part of a plant that was in his laboratory, and everyone was looking for the scientist, and they couldn't find him, and there he was. He was the plant.
Mm-hmm. I don't recall that one. I do recall the Day of the Triffids, I think, is a similar idea.
Okay. Well, today, in science news, scientists have discovered a green sea slug that is half plant and half animal. A few years ago, things that were extinct started showing up. Now, maybe they really weren't extinct. Or maybe they have been sort of brought back into our plane of existence by the many earthquakes and volcanoes and the cracking open of the Earth's crust. Maybe, for instance, the coelacanth, this very primitive prehistoric fish, supposed to have been extinct for millions of years, and now, you know, there's some that are in aquariums where you can go look at them. A lot of strange things are turning up. And the question is, okay, so where have they been, or where did they come from? And I just wonder if it's a possibility that, yes, they were extinct in our level of existence, but perhaps were not extinct in actuality, but living in pockets of water that were deep under the crust of the earth that have now been broken open, and they're free to roam the sea again. Now, that's a theory that a caller proposed, called into this show and proposed some time ago, that some of these extinct, strange sea animals, maybe that's the case. Maybe they were in pockets of water that are under the crust of the earth. And as we've had earthquakes and volcanoes under the ocean, these have been broken open, and now they're out in the ocean. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that caller and I think alike. That's right up my alley. In fact, I would say that this makes a lot of sense. That if some of my, you know, the theories that I subscribe to regarding the inner earth, the hollow earth, anything being, you know, living inside the earth, it would make sense that as we have this dramatic physical activity on the surface of the planet, that it's natural that it would maybe crack open some of these vaults, so to speak, or crack open a little doorway so that some of these things that, as you said, weren't extinct, they were just living in other places in the planet. Notice I said in, not on. To me, that makes great sense.
You're a proponent of the idea that we are going to undergo a massive polar shift.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you're aware of the fact that I am not a proponent of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to address what we've talked about here tonight. We're seeing this spate of earthquakes, the strange behavior of the sea lions, creatures that have not been out in our level and plane of existence that are now. Is there any connection to that and your theory of polar shift?
Yeah, it's the theory that I agree with. It's absolutely. In fact, I believe when I've talked about pole shift over the last few years on the several shows I've been on, this one included, I've said that my understanding is, and my belief is, that we will see earthquake activity intensify leading up to this event. Now, I was told the event was going to happen in that classic year of 2012. I was told that that's what the big 2012 event is a cataclysmic, massive polar shifting of the Earth where she shifts about 17 degrees. And I'd like to point out something. It's very interesting that, if you'll notice, the difference between true north and magnetic north on this planet is 17 degrees. And I was told that the shift would be 17 degrees. So it makes you wonder, the guys who figured this out or who believe they figured it out, what is there about true north and magnetic north that gave them the clue? It's very interesting, that little fact. But yes, I do believe that the earthquake activity is what we're going to see leading up to it. I think it's the red flag.
The volcanic activity in the ocean has just gone crazy over the past 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been heating up the water. And, of course, that causes melting of polar ice caps. That causes weather changes. And, there are people who say, that, aha, well, you know, that's global warming. It isn't. It's ocean warming. And the oceans drive the weather. It's not the CO2 in the atmosphere that drives the weather. It's the temperatures of the oceans. The oceans drive the weather. And this activity, this volcanic activity, has increased tremendously under the oceans. And now it seems that we are seeing what it appears to me to be quite an increase in earthquake activity. So based on that, and based on we have seen some climate change, again as a result of the changing temperature and composition of the oceans due to volcanic activity. When you put the two together, just how intense do you think this polar shift would be if the theory you subscribe to comes to pass?
Catastrophic. Let me say cataclysmic. there's going to be survivors. This isn't going to wipe out the human race. I've been told that oceans are going to be displaced as the land masses move around dramatically. You're going to have big areas, your coastal areas, of course, will be decimated greatly. And I think I've described in the past what's left of, say, for instance, North America is kind of a horseshoe shape, an upside-down U that will be left. But the western coast of Canada, the United States, and Mexico, they're going to be inundated under the sea. great portions of them, and then of course the Eastern Seaboard as well. And it's going to be huge. It's going to be one of those events that remains in our mythology, global mythology of every culture for ages to come, because it's happened before. And it's something that the Earth does regularly, but that's how big it's going to be. It's going to be something that becomes part of our mythology, and becomes something that future scientists who know everything will laugh and titter and make jokes about and say, "Oh, that never happened," you know, far enough down the road, like they do now, you know. I'd like to say too that the I subscribe to the idea that what's going on with pole shift, the Earth is preparing to do this. The planet, notice I didn't say she, I said the planet. The planet does this. It's part of the clockwork of how the planet just works and is designed, engineered, and does this regularly over so many thousands of years. And what some people are pointing to as this global warming crisis, these are actually the symptoms of a coming pole shift. Has nothing to do with our cars and what we drive. The global warming crisis is basically just a political and a business agenda. I think everybody sees that now. We won't beat that dead horse. But because what's really going on is the planet's getting ready for this massive little shift.
The West Coast is, according to the theory that you subscribe to, the West Coast is going to be subsurface. It's going underwater, right?
Yes.
Have you got a boat?
Well, I like to say down here in Southern California, if you're in the Inland Empire area, what we call Rim of the World Drive up in the San Bernardino Mountains is going to be the new PCH this far south. But I plan to be east of I would say I'm gonna plan to be east of the California-Nevada state line.
You're coming to
when we get close to this.
You're coming closer to Phoenix then.
Yeah.
But you know the thing about it, when you move over there, now you've got to contend with Yellowstone supervolcano.
That's right.
And in the pole shift, one of the things that the theory suggests is that some of these supervolcanoes will crack open, and if Yellowstone happens to decide to explode, you'll still be in the kill zone.
Yeah, and even if you're not in the kill zone, you're going to be in the aftermath of the ash. You know, it's gonna get ugly. There's going to be a lot. I've said it before. There's going to be a lot of people killed. We're talking in the tens of millions. Okay, between the people that aren't going to believe it, the people that just can't get away, and the people that even if they get away, how the areas are going to be affected. You know, it's going to get pretty ugly and dark for a while, but there will be survivors. We'll survive and rebuild human civilization. I firmly believe that, because it's happened before.
If there's a complete breakdown, now, and let me say for our listeners, I mean, sometimes people don't understand because most talk shows have an agenda. This one doesn't, and I don't promote my agenda. And I have people like yourself who have theories that they're not mine. I don't subscribe to that theory. But who can prove which theory is right? There's no way to prove it until we wait and see. And I might be right. You might be right. Now, having said that, let's assume that your theory is correct and that this happens. The aftermath would be a situation where you have a complete and total breakdown of what we think of as just normal things that we have for civilization. Okay, your train lines mostly are not going to be running. Refineries are not going to be working, so there's no fuel for the cars. There won't be any electricity. In other words, modern civilization gets turned off. It's just turned off.
Maybe.
Well, if it's as devastating as you say...
But what if... See, I look at the pole shift as a reboot, so to speak. This is the planet resetting itself. Okay, now think about this. We have, let's go back to mythology. We have in our mythology, we have what we call a golden age, and then, you know, the age of heroes, and I believe in ancient Hindu scripture, there's the various yugas, and we're in the Kali Yuga right now, which is kind of the worst time, but they remember a time when there was this golden age of, really, when you read it, advanced technology and longevity, and the earth was a paradise. Now, if they have, in their mythology, these cycles, and then it starts over again, what is a start over but a reboot? And according to these mythologies, and not just the Hindu one, but let's talk about that one, it starts over and goes back to the beginning of the process. Well, the beginning of the process is pretty much universally recognized as this golden era. Now, how does that translate into what I'm talking about? Well, when the Earth resets itself, that could include the power grid we're talking about that goes through the grid through the ley lines could be charged up and more readily available for use. So ironically, after all this cataclysm, the people poised with the knowledge and you know, to jump on this might actually bring our civilization up to, in some ways, a higher level than what we have now, because this power system, this power grid, will be more readily, you know, able to plug into. You know, all we have to do is maintain records of, say, Tesla technology. All we have to do is manufacture.
Hate to do it. We have a break taking over, and we'll pick up with maintaining the records of Tesla technology when we come back. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm talking with Walter Bosley. Walter, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence because of the break, but let me give you the floor, and you can complete your thought.
I was just stating that after this cataclysmic event, I have full faith that human civilization will return strong. You know, and I was stating specifically that maybe, you know, with the Earth resetting itself, rebooting itself, so to speak, we will have more readily access to the ability to use technologies like that which Tesla came up with, and that which the ancient Mahabharata of Hindu scripture talks about, with flying machines and the Tesla anti-gravity devices like that. Because the Earth has reset itself and the grid is flowing stronger and more ready to be tapped into. So I don't see that this necessarily will throw us into some dark age or stone age necessarily. It's not necessary. All we have to do is maintain records and maybe some, you know, a few samples of Tesla technology, for example. And I guarantee you there's going to be people who see this coming that are going to do this. You know, you got these guys that they're going to do it. They're going to find some storehouse, some warehouse to store some of this stuff and keep it as safe as they can. And some of it's going to survive. And they're going to bring it out, and civilization marches on.
All right. I hope if the pole shift happens, and I hope that the rest of what you are predicting happens as well. But I'm hoping your pole shift theory is wrong.
I hope you're able to laugh at me with me if this doesn't happen.
Well, I'm hoping that your pole shift theory is wrong, I won't laugh at you. I just hope you're wrong. All right. From Australia, we have a flash message, and it says, is the pole shift happening? What do you say?
I would say, personally, yes. That's what I'm saying, is it is beginning to happen, of course. It is in the process of happening.
And then his next comment is, yes, I would not be surprised if the UFO object, I think he's referring to the one that I just talked about, this object that's going to fly past Earth in the morning. He says, I would not be surprised if the UFO object is checking for our space defense systems. No, I don't know. They don't know what this object is. They don't know. Don't you find that a little odd, Walter? They know it's between 33 to 50 feet across. They know that, and they can't tell us what it is?
They're telling us they don't know what it is. My first guess is, they know darn well what it is, but perhaps the nature of it is a big uh-oh that they don't want to explain. Or are they saying they have no clue whatsoever, or have they come out and said, we believe it's a natural object, we just can't specify, or are they stating that they're completely in the dark?
No, it just says they don't know what it is. That's all it says. But if you know it's between 33... Now look at the specificity of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just guessing, you would say, oh, I don't know, between 30 and 50 feet. But when you say it's between 33 feet to 50 feet, why did you pick 33? That's pretty specific. You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, I follow you. It indicates a higher level of awareness than is being admitted to.
Yeah. And we don't know what it is, but we know it's 33 feet to 50 feet across, and we know it's going to pass us at 80,000 miles away. So we know where it's going, we see where it's coming from, we know its size, but we don't know what it is.
You know,
nonsense.
I'm curious, where do they say it's coming from?
Oh, well, it's, you know, they've just tracked its path back, you know, through space.
Well, I mean, generally, in what direction of space any particular star?
No, it doesn't say. The article doesn't say. But they've been tracking it, so, you know.
I find that telling.
Yeah.
The fact that they didn't say, this is coming from the region of, say, the Orion Nebula, or the region of, you know, this quadrant of space. It's interesting. You need to look at what they don't say as much as what they do say.
Exactly. And in fact, on my vlog, if anybody has not seen it, you need to go watch my vlog after the show, of course. What I did over the weekend, I was in southern Arizona. Went down to a town called Ajo. And while I was there, I saw a sign. You know, one of those signs that, you know, it's green, it's got white letters, and it has the names of other towns and locations and tells you how many miles it is to that town. And one of them is called Why. Why. 10 miles outside of Ajo. And I thought, I have got to see Why. I've got to go there. And so I went there, and if you watch my vlog, I videotaped that vlog from Why, Arizona. And the reason is because that's what we ask all the time. If there's information missing, why? If you know it's 33 feet, not 30, not 20 to 50, not, oh, it's about 40 feet, but 33 feet. You're being very specific. And here's another thing. If you're measuring it down something that small, coming through space at a high rate of speed, you've got a pretty good focus on it. Wouldn't you say?
I would agree heartily.
All right, now you've got it down to 33 feet, 33 to 50 feet, and it's going to pass 80,000 miles away, and we don't know what it is. My question, why? Why, when you know with that specificity about its size, its speed, and how far it's going to be when it passes Earth, if you got all that information, why don't you know what it is? I don't believe that. I don't believe it at all.
Well, in light of what we've been talking about tonight, what could the planet, for some reason, be reacting to this approaching object? Could this be the cause of the intensity of the the earthquake activity we're seeing, the volcano activity we're seeing? It's either, you know, and then on the other hand, is the object, of course, on its way here because of what's going on on the Earth?
Now, here's interesting. Those are good questions. Here's an interesting thing. There's two points in the article that I've, other than the fact that, well, we don't know what it is. Nonsense, hogwash, come on. We're not kindergartners. We don't believe that. All right, but here's two other interesting points. If you have a pretty good amateur telescope, you should be able to see it as it passes the Earth. Okay. The article also says, well, we don't know. It might be space junk. You know what? If this is a craft that's coming in, they want to be able to say, well, people thought they saw a UFO, but it's just a piece of space junk. Doesn't that make sense to you?
It seems perfectly like something that they would do.
Yeah, you set it up so you can deny it by saying, okay, it wasn't an asteroid. All you people saw it with your telescopes. It wasn't an asteroid. Yeah, it was space junk. Okay, I don't buy that because they know every piece of space junk that's in orbit around this planet. If it's space junk, it's being tracked down to 4 inches in length. And they know exactly what it is. They have each piece cataloged. And they constantly monitor 17,000 pieces of space junk. And they're saying they don't know what this is, but it might be space junk. Wait a minute. If it is, then it's on your catalog. And it's on your screen, and you're monitoring it every day, 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So the story doesn't hang together. They do know what it is. It is not an asteroid. I don't think it is, because they're saying, well, you know, it might be space junk. It's something they don't want you to be able to see, but they can't stop it. And if you do see it, they want to be able to tell you, it's just space junk.
They want as many people as they can get to ignore it.
Sure. Sure. But here's another possibility. The other possibility is this. Maybe it's not that the Earth is reacting to this incoming object. Maybe this incoming object is out in front of something bigger that's behind it, a long ways away.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Scout probe.
Yeah. And maybe the big thing that's out there, maybe it is something they called Nibiru. Or maybe it is something not that big. Maybe it's just a big mothership out there, and it's going to be parked out there, too far for us to see, but this is maybe a scout probe. Who knows? Who knows? But, the story about space junk, Walter, there are, three organizations, three agencies that track space junk. And the primary one is in Florida. And they track 17,000 pieces of space junk. They have each piece cataloged. They know what that piece is. They know its size. And they track pieces down to 4 inches in length. So to tell us maybe it's space junk, nah, that's on your catalog. If it's space junk, that's on your catalog, and you know it. So it isn't space junk.
You've got to ask yourself, too, if it's space junk, what the heck is our space junk doing coming from so far away? If you look at the trajectory, it seems like it's coming from quite a distance.
I'm not aware of us having anything 80,000 miles away from Earth. Now think about that.
They would argue that an old piece of space junk, you know, that went astray has worked its way into that. That would be the explanation. But, you know, before I forget, I kind of wanted to tell you where they say the sea lions have gone to.
Yeah, give us an update on the sea lions.
Well, the latest report I found is that they thousands of sea lions, they believe these are the California sea lions, have shown up 11 miles north of Florence, Oregon, which is was reported as being between Newport and Coos Bay. I have Florence, Oregon on my on my ley line map here, on the map of the United States. And what's interesting is Florence is about halfway between two of the curvilinear ley lines that we've got. We got one going from the kind of north center.
Walter, we have another break taking over. When we come back, tell us about the ley lines and the sea lions. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking about, primarily, we're talking about these earthquakes, 161 earthquakes within the past 7 days in North America, with the most recent being this afternoon in Haiti. And one of the precursors to this was the sea lions went missing from Pier 39, which is located where, Walter?
Is in the Wharf District of San Francisco.
Okay. So where did they go?
Well, reportedly, as said before, they thousands of sea lions, and they believe these are the ones from California, have started to appear in a place 11 miles north of Florence, Oregon. Now, Florence is due west from Eugene, and it's at the mouth of a river that goes out into the sea, or comes in from the sea, whichever way it flows. This is a place called the Sea Lion Caves, okay? And on the map, the handmade map that Seshery made for me of all the lines I've talked about in the past, you have a line to the north part of the state that curves out of Washington from the northeast down through Portland, Oregon, and back out to sea west of Portland going northwest. And then it takes a little southern dip through Portland. And then the other one to the south goes almost out of Oregon through the very southwestern corner of the state at the California border there and near Oregon. Now, the sea lions, if they've gone up smack dab where Florence is kind of smack dab in the middle between these two curvilinear lines, okay,
mm-hmm.
That tells me that the sea lion, the activity is so intense and that the sea lions are so agitated by the effect that this has on the ley line system, and there is a ley line going right through Pier 39. We've talked about it in the past. I talk about it in Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom, which people can buy on your website right now. I talk about the significance of the seals at Pier 39 and the ley lines. If they've gone that far, they've gotten out of California, they're as far away in Oregon as they can get from these lines, that tells me that the system is so agitated that they just want to get the heck away from the ley lines because it's agitating them so much that in the earthquakes we've been seeing in the last week especially are evidence of that, but also since they've all gone up there and they've been there over a month and there's no sign of them coming back here, what's to come? It indicates that something is to come. Now, people will tell you, well, they left because their food sources left. Well, ask yourself, what made the herring, what made the other food sources leave? The fish are animals, too. Now, if you have doubts on this animal thing, I recommend you go to sheldrake.org, where Rupert Sheldrake has written articles on this, and he's got an article about the Indonesian earthquake in 2004, Kevin, which you've mentioned before, and he also talks about a 2001 earthquake in Seattle of a 6.8 magnitude, which up to the event of the earthquake, people were realized that their animals were acting very strange. So, you know, and I've heard it all my life growing up in California, if the dog and cat and the birds start acting strange, there might be a quake coming. And, you know, I've observed that. So I think these sea lions have skedaddled up there to Oregon away from these lines because there's quite a bit more activity to come. And being on or near these lines, they're more sensitive to it, and it just agitated them. Or it agitated their food sources, and indeed they did follow the food source. But my money's on these lines will tell the story.
Well, the Indonesian earthquake, you know, there were stories after that where you had little small islands, just barely even a dot on the map, but inhabited, and most, if not all, the people survived. And the reason is when they saw animals heading for higher ground in a hurry, they followed them. They went to higher ground as well. And I say that, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think a lot of people around the earth would go to that island and say, well, this is very primitive. Maybe, but they were smart enough not to stand on the beach and get wiped out. You know, they survived, so how primitive are they?
And exactly. You know, sometimes it pays to pay attention to, you know, before I said, you know, regarding talking about the Earth, you know, I refer to the planet. I don't refer to the Earth as a she, just because I don't buy into the planet being an entity. I just don't buy into that. However, the planet is the home of many systems in nature. You've got to pay attention to nature because nature will tip you off with what's coming. You've got to pay attention to the animals. They're more hypersensitive to things than we have become. And the animals know. They pick this stuff up. They sense it. I would say that if you look closer, you might be able to see signs where the plant life, certainly, which is aware on some level, where the plant life might even be showing us signs that we're not getting. You know, there's the old story that when a rainstorm's coming, you see the leaves turn.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you someone that would be good for us to talk to about that would be Dr. Gerald Epling. Because Epling he's a scientist, and he has proven scientifically that plants respond to our thoughts. Not
sure.
Just, yeah. You know, we've all heard about, well, if you play music, they grow better, and, you know, if you talk to
yeah.
them. You know, he has proven, and when I say scientifically, I mean with instruments that he can measure, that plants will respond to our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, and I've had long conversations with him about this, I'm not sure he buys this, but it means that at some level they're conscious.
Now, that would surprise me far less than the planet itself being some conscious entity. I think the planet is the home. It's the big house where, you know, all these living systems live. You know, if it came out to be proved that plant life has a conscience, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I've got no problem with that concept.
Well, if it can respond to our thoughts... If it can respond to our thoughts, it is in some way receiving our thoughts, and it
yes.
is in some way interpreting those thoughts.
Yes, that's a fascinating concept, and there I think there may be something to that. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, Walter, we're just about out of time, and I want to thank you for being here with us tonight. It's always a pleasure when you're on, and we talk about such strange and weird and varied things when you're here, but that's because you're kind of a strange and weird and varied guy.
That's absolutely certain there.
All right, if you will, just hang on the phone line with me for a moment.
Sure.
And again, thanks for being here. Folks, 161 earthquakes in North America in the past 7 days. And we've talked about on this show, before one of those happened, we talked about this premonition, if you will, that a particular individual had. Well, now it's not a premonition. We'll just have to get him to explain it to you. But it's a system, mathematical system, and some experiential system that goes with it. And he is saying that there will be another very significant event. And he's told us the date. Now, we have a way to verify what he said would happen and to verify the date. And what we're going to do, whether it comes true or does not come true, either way, within 24 hours after that date, what we're going to do is reveal to you what it is, and you will get to see the verification process. So you'll get to know for sure. All right, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.